Okay, so what do you do?
Well, here what I do is I try to help kids make it through adolescence and into adulthood without too much trauma. And what I mean by that is I try to keep them focused, try to keep them from getting in jail, getting arrested. Try to keep them interested in school because so many of the kids here just, they lose interest in education at a really early age. And, if you ask about the statistics may say, 14, 15, but I'm thinking that a lot of our kids lose interest in education a lot earlier than that. And I won't say an age, but I'll say a lot earlier than that. And it's sad. So my kids here are between the ages of 14 and going to young adults who are 30. And, I find that, we give out a form when the kids first come in, and we ask them what do they see themselves doing in 5 years. And, I got kids telling me they see themselves getting their GED in 5 years. So you got an eighth grader who has not yet entered into high school, who has already told you that they don't see themselves graduating. They see themselves quitting at some point. You know what I mean? And the GED has become so commonplace in this community that they see it as a prize. You know, a prize that is even larger than a high school diploma. So what I try to do is I try to open up their eyes that they might see, that there's something else. And, I think that, it's my personal opinion, I don't know if it's necessary for this, but I think in a sense that, some of our kids that are coming out of high school probably couldn't pass the GED. And I don't know if you, and that's kind of, a profound statement, but I know that the kids are coming out of high school and they don't know how to read. Kids are coming out of high school, they don't know how to add and subtract. You know what I mean? But you have to know these things in order to pass the GED. So there are kids who come out of high school who probably couldn't pass the GED. But what going to high school and graduating high school represents is it represents the ability to get with something and stick with something and complete something. You know what I mean? So, and while you're there, my objective is to encourage them to absorb and learn as much as they can while they're there.
Great. Now, other programs try to help youth in the area, but some of them are they kind of like the old adage: if you build it, they will come.
Right.
People build programs all the time, and oftentimes nobody comes.
Yeah, well, that's true. If you build it, they will come. They will come. I mean, out of curiosity. The thing is to keep them there once they get there. And I still believe that's kind of true. If you build it, they'll come. But once they get there, if they don't see a place for themselves, then they're going to turn around and leave. You know what I mean? And what we do at this center that is not necessarily traditional is we have a little more relaxed set of rules. Of course, we don't allow anything that's dangerous, no weapons, no fighting, no cursing, no indecent language, things of that nature. But we do kind of allow them to stretch out a little bit, and we allow them to talk. And we're not always sitting in their groups, but we're always within earshot of them. Whereas, like I said, in my office, but they're out here. So when I'm in there, a lot of times they'll get loose and they'll start talking. And by allowing them to be themselves, I get a chance to hear certain things. I get a chance to really hear what they're talking about to each other. And then what I'll do is once I gather some information or I get to know some things, I'll get them on one-on-one situations. And the one-on-one is a really, really important part of getting people to come back, right? Like we said, we're talking about you build it, they'll come. They come, but you have to engage them once they get here. And what my personal way of doing it is I engage them all one-on-one. I grew up in Albert Terrace, which is just up the street. You know, I'm a product of this same environment, and you know, I know a lot of them. A lot of them are second and even third generation residents of Syracuse Housing Authority. So, you know, I was fortunate enough for as my family could move out, but I still remember the 60s and 70s when I came up. And when I engage these kids personally, so many times I find out that I knew their parents, their grandparents, and sometimes even their great and great great grandparents. Mm-hmm. Because, of course, when I was a child, there was a 70-year-old guy in our neighborhood. You know, mm-hmm. I knew him. Mm-hmm. And turns out this 70-year-old guy, when I was a child, happens to be your great-great-grandfather. Mm-hmm. And I knew him, and I respected him. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when you can show them that, you know what I mean, that breaks down a really, really large barrier. And from there, you know, you can just kind of get into them and talk to them. I show them a lot of love. I love all the kids. And I show them a lot of respect. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I think that they can feel the love. And they can recognize the respect, and they can see it. So with that, I think, or that approach, mm-hmm. I think that's part of the reason that I'm able to get the kids to come in. Mm-hmm. And I have kids that come in here, and they not only do they come in here, but they gravitate towards me. I mean, these kids come in, they'll come and sit in my office, and I'm trying to do something, and they'll just sit there until I stop, because they're there, and they want me to acknowledge them or recognize them. And so that's kind of my approach. And with that, you know, I'm no social psychologist or social worker or whatever. I don't have any great degrees, but I have had kids. You know what I'm saying? I still have kids, but you know, my kids are grown now. And so I do have parenting skills. Mm-hmm. You follow what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And you know, and I know how to mentor someone, and I know how to be an example. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I think that is what I do. I just try to show an example of what you can be and still be, you know, cool, if you will, or still be yourself.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I mean, you also do have an angle to get them in.
Right.
That's kind of unique. Can you want to talk a little bit about that one?
Well, yeah. You know, there's an angle, and I'm glad you brought that up. You know, a lot of the kids today are into the technology, the multimedia, the digital photography, the digital video. Everybody wants to be a singer or a rapper, so you know, I have an experience, you know, kind of unique in a sense that most people don't have the same experience. But I'm a musician, and been a musician in this area for about 30 years, and you know, having had the opportunity to you know, perform and travel and learn a lot about the business of music and the use of new technologies. So, you know, what that is in plain and simple English is that I know how to record songs on Pro Tools, Acid Pro, Fruity Loops, and stuff like that. I know how to make digital videos. I know how to, you know, transpose and put them on YouTube and on the internet. And I know how to build MySpace pages, which is things that are commonplace and you know, simple to most young adults. But me being a 48-year-old man, it's kind of unique because most of my peers, you know, what is that? You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I'm able to interact with them that way. And so they come in and they make their own songs and, you know, they put them up on the website. Or, you know, we do some digital photography. They love to take pictures. So we take pictures and we edit them and we crop them. But what that also does is it gives them a first-hand view or an opportunity to see that everything that we see and hear in this world is not exactly what it is. You know, it has been through a process most of the time. And so therefore, when you're looking at a picture of, you know, some icon that MTV shows you or BET shows you, you can see through it now because you've used the same software that has taken your own picture and cleared all the blemishes out of your face and made your skin silky smooth. So now when you look at, say, Beyonce on TV, you don't necessarily have to believe that she really looks like that. Mm-hmm. And that kind of takes the edge off, you know. Mm-hmm. So the kids aren't so fooled anymore. So, I guess I could talk a lot about that. But, you know, that angle is definitely something that slides the kids right in the door. Mm-hmm. Because everyone comes in. And what I do, too, again, like I say, going back to the part of, you know, giving of myself, you know, personally and showing them love, you know what I mean? This program, we've been blessed through this program to have money enough to buy certain equipment that they can use. But again, my own personal experience and being a musician and a creative person myself, I've purchased a lot of my own things. And I actually bring my own things in here and I allow them to use it. And they know that it's mine and they know that it's my personal stuff. So, you know, when they see that I'm here and, well, this is his, this is not the program's, and it's a very expensive piece, you know what I mean? And he's letting us use it. They kind of understand that you are giving something to them that is more than just showing up for your paycheck. And that's important. I wish that, you know, there's only one of me and there's so many of them. You know what I mean? So, you know, I just wish that there were more to go around.
Now, so, now, you were a musician before you were ever involved in this?
I was a musician first, and I still am.
Yeah, and I ask, you know, and this is sort of a typical, because these are people who want to make the world a better place, often students who are going into human services, not for the pay, but, so they want to figure out, how did you come to be what you are?
How did I come to be?
Yeah.
Well, you know, in short, and you know, being a musician, you get the opportunity to perform in front of a lot of people. Being a musician, you get the opportunity, if you're good, you have a good unit and outfit, you get the opportunity to meet a lot of people. And in meeting a lot of people, sometimes when they see you, they see things in you. You know what I mean? They may see your human service component. They may see, you know, a kindness in you. They may see and intelligence in you, they see things in you. And so therefore, oftentimes you get approached by different entities to do different things. When I started here, it wasn't like I went out to apply for a job. I was approached by someone from Syracuse Housing Authority who knew me through just my position in the community as a musician and a person who is highly visible, and they said that I think that you would fit well in our program. And when they first came to me, I really wasn't very interested. I'd never really worked with kids per se or young people at that age, and I didn't know that I'd be here for 4 years looking at another 4 or 10 years. But the way I kind of got here is just by being a visible person. People know me in the community, and people see things in me, I guess. And I was asked to be here. And now that I'm here, it's a perfect fit. It's a perfect fit.
And they had seen you performing, and they just noticed.
Well, you know, not just performing, but like I said, I'm a very visible person in the community. If I, you know, was to lay out, you know, the things that I've done over the last 20 years, it might take too long. But, you know, I was the official face for Census 2000. I was probably on, probably newscasted probably over 100 times.
Oh, really?
Yeah, during Census 2000.
So the official face, what is that? Is that
well, I was, actually, no, not on posters, but, I say the official face. What my actual job was, I was a partnership specialist. And what my mission was to, of course, get the accurate count of the census in this area, in five counties, actually. But there was an awareness program that we put forward, campaign that we put forward. Then there was an education campaign that we put forward. And then there was a response campaign. So my job was to make partnerships with community-based organizations, businesses, schools, you name it, news organizations, and just kind of raise the awareness, educate the public. So if there was a census question in 2000 or a census related issue that someone had to speak about, I would be the person that would be on the news talking about it. So, you know, people see me in that light. You know, I write a lot, you know, and creative writing, and I send it out through email. A lot of times my friends see my little creative writing. So, and it's a small community, too. And my family's a, you know, a pretty upstanding family in the community. We're church-going people. People recognize me through my church. So I'm just a highly visible guy in this community, and that is just not within my community, which is the African-American community, but it reaches out. I mean, all communities, all ethnic communities. So I'm often asked to do things, and I turned down a lot of things, too.
So how did you become the official census? Is there a training to be
well,
a census, or is that a sort
what
of
it was is, a, again, you know, like I say, just like I got here, I don't know that I've ever applied for a job other than when I was a youngster, maybe, you know, my teens or early years. But that particular job, I did the census in 1990. I liked it. I liked what it was all about. I understand what it stands for.
So you're a census taker? You were.
I never was a door-to-door census taker. I was a crew leader. I was a recruiter, partnership specialist. But it's just that I think someone saw something in me when I began 2000. Census as a recruiter, and you know, I took the job seriously. You know, I went out into our community again, the Black community and the Hispanic community, minority communities actually, within five counties, which Onondaga, Oswego, Cortland, Cayuga, and Wayne, I think it was, it's been a while, but Wayne or Monroe, one of the two. And my objective was to go out and try to recruit people to help take the census. And I took that as a serious thing. You know what I mean? And I put myself into it. The same energy that I give to kids was the same energy that I brought. And people recognize that. You know? It's like, you know, I don't want to get too Christian or biblical on you, but, you know, it's like, you know, the Bible says that we should not put our light under a bushel. We should let it shine. And, you know, oftentimes people don't have vision to see something from beginning to end, which is what vision is. A vision is when you... Vision is more than an idea. Idea is like, hey, I see something. Maybe I can figure this out. A vision is when you see something from beginning to the end, and you see all the chips and where they all fall down. And a lot of times people don't have vision. But when you do have a vision, you know, it is your responsibility to let it shine and let people see it. And like Tom Modette says, you know what I mean, we'll leave the light on. What that really means is that you may not know where you need to go, but we'll leave the light on. And when you see our light, just come with us. So I think that sometimes I just allow my light to shine, and people see it and they say, yeah, that's where I want to go. And I get a lot of offers, and I'm thankful for it. And I know that you know, I'm blessed because of it. You know what I'm saying? So that's kind of how I got the job at the census. Someone saw me. I actually got a phone call. I didn't apply for that job either. I got a phone call. I used to do taxes, H&R Block. Did everybody's taxes in the neighborhood. Everybody. So I did it with a guy. He was second in command at Census 2000. And he says, I know just the person to do this. So he went back through H&R Block, and he begged him to give him my number. He got my number. And he called me, and he says, Reggie, this is... and he called me down, and he says, I know you're perfect for this job.
Just from doing his taxes?
Well, he actually did taxes with
me. Oh, he did taxes with you. So
he was tax preparer with me, but he had... he really didn't get it. You know what I mean? We went through like 4 months of training. And he's a very intelligent guy, but he just didn't get doing the taxes. I did so many, just like I said, the kids gravitate towards me here. I did more taxes than anyone. They begged me to come back for years, but the reason that I didn't go back is they didn't pay enough money. But it's just people came in, they were looking, they were sitting in the, oh, I'm waiting for Reggie Siegler. You know what I mean? Oh, no, I want to see him. And he'd hear us back there. We'd laugh and talk. And I think he just knew that there was something that I had that attracted people. So you're gonna be writing for a long time.
Yeah, well, it helps. So you remember it, you know, for the case study. So you were a musician for all this year. This time, you've sort of been asked to do things, you know, from one position to the next. Part of doing what you're doing here involves funding.
Right. Yes.
And so you've got to sort of jump through the hoops, in a sense. And, you know, it sounds like what you're describing you do here is a lot broader and bigger than what...
It is. It's a lot bigger than just coming in and making sure that 10 people... get from the sixth grade to seventh grade, or 12 people find jobs. It's all about helping people out with their lives, because oftentimes, I think everyone can be educated. That's the first thing I need to say. But I don't think necessarily that everything that is being taught in our educational system is what people are going to absorb. Everyone can learn, but you know, people are only going to absorb what it is that they feel they need to let in. You understand what I'm saying? And sometimes, you know, it's because of closed-mindedness. Sometimes it's just because of lack of just a pure lack of interest and boredom. I don't care about you know, some fancy math equation. I know how to count, add, and subtract, and that's good enough for me. But that same person, you know, might be able to design or you know, remodel the whole inside of this building. You follow what I'm saying? And I don't know that our system of education has the manpower, the ability, the money to just find each individual and find out who they really are, and then map a program that fits that individual. You follow me?
Yeah, yeah.
But when we come here, again, like I say, I don't have hundreds of kids to deal with, right? So I can actually get some time with each individual and just kind of figure out who they are. And then I just kind of help them along with their lives. Oftentimes, it does not lead to the traditional ideal of graduating high school. Maybe it doesn't lead to the traditional idea of going to college. But there are a lot of kids, quite a few kids actually, who we did not expect to graduate, who have graduated high school and actually gone out to OCC for college, and Bryan and Stratton. So we consider them success stories. You know what I mean? Because there's two or three kids in particular that I know, had it not been for this center, for myself, and for this program, I know they wouldn't have graduated high school. And they've graduated high school and they're on to college, and some are working. You know, they're not career jobs, but they're productive. You know what I mean? And I know that it's just a direct, it's directly because of our program and our intervention.
Now, and what would you consider some of the best successes of this program? I know you said about 17 kids a day.
About 17 a day.
Wow.
Well, one of the biggest successes is he was just leaving here when I was starting, but we had some interaction. Is you know, one of our kids, he's a 7-footer. His name is Andre Blatch. He plays for the Washington Wizards.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that's a big thing. And he actually he had an interest in the same thing, multimedia. We have pictures of him. His knees are probably 4 feet long. We have pictures of him sitting down at the computer, making beats and making music and splicing, editing stuff. He had the same interest, but he had another. He had another vehicle. He was strong. He's big, and he had basketball skills. And they took him right off, right out of high school, right into the pros. So, and he's playing, and he's doing well. He's not a starter, but you know, he's doing double doubles. You know, I don't know how much sports fan you are, but
a double double is at
it's like over 10 rebounds, 10 points, 10 assists, 10 rebounds.
Just two tens,
a couple tens. Yeah.
Wow. Great. And Other things that you felt were particularly...
Well, aside from that, I mean, he had a special talent. Boy, I have to think for a second. There are a lot. We have, we have one gentleman that I know is about to graduate from college in May. Mm-hmm. We probably have, since I've been here, we've probably put about 8 people into college who have actually left this program and went to college, and you know, they come back and you know, they contact us. We probably have a handful of people who have achieved their GEDs who probably would not have. I don't know. We've opened, I have one young girl who, she was in our camera club last summer, and she's 14 years old, and during the summer we had a camera club. We'd go out, we'd take pictures all over, and just basically show them the county, just to let them know that, hey, this county is not just the projects, there's some pretty things in the county. And, you know, then we bring all the pictures back they got, we taught them how to edit them, and now she comes down at least twice a week. She has her own little digital camera. She takes probably 60 pictures a day. I don't know where she gets the time. And she brings them all in, and she edits them. I mean, she spends hours doing that, and then she prints them out, and then she goes back and she sells them to her friends. Right? So she's kind of just lit a very small spark for maybe an entrepreneur. Who knows? Maybe she'll be a photographer one day. Maybe she'll have her own, you know, photography studio. Who knows? But I know that had we not exposed her to that and taught her, you know, or showed her the basics of how to do it, she wouldn't have such an interest in it. You know, and it could be something that just occupies her time now. And then maybe next year she'll be into something else. But it's important because she sees it. And not only did she see that she could take pictures, she actually saw, you know, my friends don't know how to do this, and I do. And when I show it to them, wow, can you do one of those for me? How much you want? Well, you know, I want $1. You know what I mean? So, you know, it's kind of a small thing, but it's a big thing.
Right, right.
And there's a lot of little stories like
that
makes it happen.
And making a living is important. And
for sure.
And you know an entrepreneur. You have an entrepreneur. You do a bunch of things. You're
I do more than I can count.
Yeah.
If you really want to know, I'm the first African-American sound contractor on the Midway at the State Fair. And, you know, I have a PA system. It's a pretty good size system. I've been out there about 5 years now. And I got my first opportunity to come out to the fair through the Pan African Village. And the Pan African Village, which was conceptualized by the NAACP, was a great thing, because what it did was it opened up an entranceway for, you know, African American businesses to approach the fair. So I stepped in and did it at the Pan African Village, and someone saw me and said, hey, I think this guy has got a pretty good system. He knows what he's doing. Let's see if he can do this over here. And for the last 5 years running, I've had a contract with the fair. And to my knowledge, there's been no other African American that has had a sound contract, a PA company's contract, with the State Fair. So I do that. I run a festival series in the summertime called Southwest Showcase Sundays, and that's held on the south side of the city. And what we do is we bring out a couple of bands every other Sunday throughout the city, and throughout the summer. And they come out, we get about 400 or 500 people in the park. We put up activities for kids, like the space walks where they bounce around. We bring out the bookmobile through the Syracuse City School District. We bring out the fire trailer from Focus, which is a group of African-American firefighters. They bring out a smoke trailer, and they actually simulate a fire inside, and they actually teach the kids how to go through the fire, you know, on their bellies, so that, you know, they can breathe as the smoke rises. Rosemont Gifford Zoo has offered to bring down some of the animals in the summertime through a grant, where they'll They actually break down birds and small caged animals so that the kids can see it. So it's a family affair. And I've been running that now. This is the third consecutive year. But I started out with it about 10 years ago through an organization called Jubilee Homes. And again, I didn't apply for that. Someone saw me and said, hey, you're the guy to do this. Can you do it? A Syracuse News Chaser. I don't know if you saw that. And what that is I write for Syracuse.com. And under a blog called News Chaser. So when there's news or events or things in the community that may not get picked up by the writers at the paper, I can write about it and it automatically goes on Syracuse.com. And if the articles are, you know, highly newsworthy or, you know, really, really cutting edge or something that comes out before they get to it, it actually goes in the newspaper with my picture on there and stuff like that. It's kind of cool. Again, something that I didn't go after. You know, someone saw me and said, hey, I've read some things you've written. I know who you are. We're doing this. Would you be a part of it? So, again, you know, there's so many other things. The band, the sound, recording, you know what I mean? My church, you know what I mean? I go to a fairly good-sized church in the city. And, you know, I run the media ministry at that church. So, you know, we put out the radio program once a week, and we have cameras in there, and we do videos, we sell them. So I don't do that personally. I did do that hands-on. I actually train a crew now, so I just kind of oversee that at this point. But the point I'm making is that you know, I've been so involved in so many things in the community that you know, people know me and they ask me. And when I do something, I try to be very thorough, and I try to do it you know, as if it was something that I, you know, personally thought up and owned, and as if it was my own. You know what I mean? And I think people see that and they appreciate that. Syracuse Community Health Center does a thing called an Evening of Jazz, and it's grown now to, I think they raise $300,000-$500,000 from this big event that they do. But the first 3 years, the formative years that they put this thing together, I was there. I recorded a CD for them called An Evening of Jazz, and I can actually show you that when we do the video. You know, and people know me through that. You know, now Julie Boeheim is actually the person that heads up that committee that puts on that event now. You know, it grew larger than what I could do. They're making hundreds of thousands. When I did it, they made a few thousand. So, you know, but I'm glad to say that I was there when they set it up, when they started it. And I know that the CD that we recorded went a long way because it helped to helped to change it from being an event, whereas you go one night and you forget, whereas these CDs were made as table favors.
Right,
so
right.
Everyone that went away got one of these, and they got to take it with them, and it took me. So I've networked very well, so that's why I get the opportunities.
Great. Super. I'm very glad we got a chance to do this. It's so encouraging to me to hear about this. For students too, it would be exciting. I guess the last thing is, how would you define social entrepreneurship?
Well, it's a new thought for me. I know. Well, to be an entrepreneur, in my thought process, is just someone who goes out and creates. Wealth through self-employment, or creates his living and his well-being through his own ideals, his own energies, and his own you know, stick-to-itiveness and go-getter. You know what I'm saying? So that's how I describe being an entrepreneur. So to be a social entrepreneur, I guess it's kind of the same thing, because, you know, as I've just kind of laid out for you, the networking, the projects that I've been involved with, you know, these things are all social. You know what I mean? Because, you know, anytime you interact with another person, you know, it's social. So I think just taking on certain projects, and putting forth my best efforts. I guess that's, I don't know if that's what I really want to say, but I know that, I don't know, it's a new concept for me. I guess being an entrepreneur, like I say, is going out, trying to get, trying to make a way for yourself. And I think that social entrepreneurship is just the same thing, but socially, trying to network and, you know, create a social network that grows and builds and kind of helps you out, I guess.
Okay,
so I don't know if I like that answer, but
no, that's great. It's sort of a working definition.
Yeah.
Super.